This is La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
Esto es La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana de la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
From KCSU Stanford 90.1.
Desde KCSU Stanford.
KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM.
This is La Ventana Americana from KCSU Stanford
90.1 FM.
And the program is La Ventana Americana.
A window to the Latin universe from Stanford to the world.
I am Isabel Jubes.
And I'm Elizabeth Trachtenberg.
Welcome, bienvenido.
When you grow up in an oil country, every year in school there is some oil theme in the curriculum. By third grade, in elementary school, you have seen and tested different grades of petroleum. You know its precedents, you know the history of oil excavation and the national and international policies related to it. And if your country founded the OPEC, you can also name its history, the general policies, and know the countries in it. It wasn't until I traveled as a grown-up and went to universities abroad and shared knowledge with other college students that I realized this is not a common thing around the world. It was odd to me that when I asked a Japanese, Chinese, French, or someone from USA about the origin of their energy consumption, the percentage or the importation-exportation against national production or whom they bought energy from, that I understand that it was not a common thing to know. Mucho que dar, y él merece que en este momento nadie se vaya a marchar. Todos los días que me paro, siempre pienso en mi país. Acuérdate que tú como yo nacimos aquí, entonces para qué fingir, para qué la maltratas. Today, there is a crisis in Venezuela. The country has been suffering a staggering economic crisis for too long. It has the highest number of violent crimes per capita in the world. The basic staples have been disappearing one by one. There is a shortage of toilet paper, of corn and wheat flour, of meat and chicken. The electric blackouts are common, and sometimes there are cities that go for days without electricity. Most of the private sector had been driven out of the country and the national production of goods is almost gone.
Venezuela está llorando, la estamos desintegrando.
In this case, it is not possible to understand or even to begin to explain the situation without understanding the oil policy, the oil market, at a national and international level. That is why last week, during the long day workshop at Stanford University, Pensando Venezuela, a transformation in retrospect, we had to talk with the analyst Dr. Francisco Munaldi, who came to explain the process and changes of the petroleum policies and market during the last few years, and how it had affected the situation that got Venezuela to this point.
Venezuela estuvo de luto, un 15 de diciembre la naturaleza acabó con muchas casas, mucha gente, pero demostramos que podemos salir adelante. Si fuimos hermanos en ese momento, ahora brillemos como diamantes.
Dr. Francisco Munaldi is a professor at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He holds a PhD in political science from Stanford, and he is also a professor at IESA in Caracas. He has an extensive academic and consulting experience in policy and oil management.
Reporting Isabel Jubes from the conference, talking with Dr. Munaldi.
We are thankful to have him at La Ventana Americana.
Guerrilla seca, haciendo un llamado. Aquí estamos, luchando por Venezuela. Vamos a darle, vamos a echar para adelante que en realidad podemos.
So we're here at Stanford University, and today I'm talking with Francisco Munaldi. He was part today of a workshop called Pensando Venezuela, Transformation in Retrospect. And he was talking about Venezuela, oil and politics in booms and busts. Thank you for talking to us with La Ventana Americana. How are you?
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So today you're topic was oil and politics. So what do you think is the future in an oil country as Venezuela, how they can look forward after this crisis? Which ones do you think are the best scenarios?
The best and the worst. we have had the previous 10 years the largest windfall in the history of the oil industry and in Latin America. Venezuela received an amount of money that never any other country in Latin America ever received in a decade. Unfortunately, we not only wasted this spectacular boom, but we got significantly into debt, and our country is producing less of everything, but also less oil. So we are the boom is only a boom in the price of oil, but not in the production of oil. So that makes Venezuela an extremely vulnerable country. If there is a decline in the price of oil, as many expect, it's very difficult to predict, of course, but a lot of forecasts expect a decline. The country will be in deeper trouble than it already is. And so that could prompt Venezuela into a very significant recession with, I mean, we are already in with very high inflation and very little growth, almost zero growth. So the prospects are really bad in case of a decline in the price of oil. Even if the price of oil keeps at the same level, the situation is very dire because the country is importing everything and it doesn't have enough foreign currency to fulfill all the imports that it requires. The country faces a very tough situation. 96% of our exports are oil, and we don't produce anything else, and it's very volatile, the price of oil. So.
But it hasn't always been the case, isn't it?
Venezuela used to produce other goods, but it was always dependent on oil, but never as dependent as it is today. We used to have other exports. About 20% of our exports were of other goods, and that we had a private sector that exported. We don't have anymore a private sector that exports anything, and we import everything. I mean, we are a country that imports almost all its needs in terms of food, in terms of basic medicines, and so even, I mean, manufacturing goods that we used to produce, like cars, are almost all now imported. So it's a very difficult situation for the future.
And what do you think will be the change, if there is really a change during this year after this crisis? Do you think the change is not depending that much of oil, or actually making the oil industry more efficient?
I mean, there are a lot of opportunities. One of the good things about how bad things are is that there is a lot of room for improvement. So that's the way to look at things. But yes, I mean, there are, for example, a lot of things there is huge potential, for example, in the oil industry. A lot of investors are willing to get into Venezuela. The reason why they are not doing it is because the property rights are not, the government is not credible. PDVSA, the oil company, is very badly managed, and it's not capable of managing the oil projects. And so there are a lot of issues that prevent this spectacular potential for being realized. Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world, and so the potential is immense. So things can turn around relatively quickly if the appropriate institutional changes are done. However, it won't be easy because, you know, politically it's a very tough situation. The country is extremely polarized. It will be tough to rebuild the oil industry. And so the challenges are very significant, but the potential is there for a big turnaround. And we have seen turnarounds in other countries in Latin America that have been extremely impressive, like Colombia or Chile decades ago, or even Peru, and even Mexico now. Mexico is in a very promising, it's a country with a very promising future at this point. So I am hopeful, but the challenges are huge.
The prices, you say that they are supposed to be sinking a little bit. Is this because of people trying to change, moving away from...
No, mostly at this point is because there is a slowdown in the world economy, because China is not growing as fast as it was growing the last decade. So the demand for oil in that sense is declining a little bit. And on the other hand, there is a boom in oil production in the U.S. that nobody ever expected to happen of this magnitude. So North Dakota is producing more oil than many countries around the world. and that has created a significant additional supply of oil that has created the prospects for a decline in the price because of additional supply and the demand not growing as fast as we expected.
Which is also pretty good news for U.S., but not as good for Venezuela because their biggest buyers
for
United States.
For the U.S., I mean, the energy revolution happening in the U.S. is a spectacular news for the U.S. In fact, the U.S. has become a more competitive country than anyone expected in terms of the energy prices are very, very low compared to Europe or Asia. But for Venezuela, of course, we are totally dependent. So.
Yes, right. But the use of oil is not just in energy. It's in a lot of the products that we consume, in all the plastic and all.
Just a small fraction, about 10%. Most of the oil is used for transportation, basically cars and planes. That's most of the use of oil. A little bit for production of electricity, and about 10% for petrochemicals that end up producing plastics and all these types of goods. But most of the oil is used for transportation, and this is the only area in which oil, because, for example, in electricity production, oil has been substituted almost everywhere in the world for coal, natural gas, and renewable energies. But in the case of transportation, there are no good substitutes for oil.
An independent, publicly supported nonprofit TV platform that reaches 35 million households in the U.S. Using both television and the internet, Free Speech TV inspires viewers to become civically engaged in building a more just, equitable, and sustainable society. You can get involved by joining an online community, subscribing to the e-guide or RSS feed, sharing videos, of course, making a donation. For more information, visit freespeech.org.
I want you to remember that this is an archive show of La Ventana Americana, a bilingual cultural show under my independent website, StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org, on air every Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on KZSU, Stanford 90.1 FM.
And I'm Isabel Jubes. If you have any questions or want to know more about today's show, you can go to LaVentanaAmericana.com.
Reporting Isabel Jubes from the conference, talking with Dr. Monaldi.
So in the big strike a few years ago, Venezuela fired most of the PDVSA workers.
18,000 people, yeah.
Yes.
About half of the workforce. Particularly, they fired all the research and development people, all the top engineers, all the management. So they had a huge loss. Basically, it's not like they fired half of the people. They hired half of the most important people in the company.
The brains.
Yes. Of the.
So after this big... If there is any change at all in the status quo right now in Venezuela, is there any chance that those 18,000 brains will go back?
I don't think so. That's a short answer. But I think many of them will get back involved into the oil industry in Venezuela in some way or another, you know, from the companies they work. They already have a life, you know, outside of Venezuela, in Canada, Mexico, Colombia. But some of them, because of the opportunities in Venezuela are so significant, some of them, I think their companies will ask them to go and do things in Venezuela. So some of that human capital will benefit Venezuela, but I don't think that most of them will be interested in getting back into the national companies, unfortunately.
So, and the people who came after them, are there any new good forces of engineers that are actually starting?
I mean, they have spent a lot of money in training of new people, and there are some good young people there, but the problem is that they lack the experience that the others had. And, you know, the company is very politicized, and so the decisions are not taken in technical grounds, or the decisions to promote you are not necessarily taken because of the right reasons. So that is not creating an atmosphere for the best to want to work there. So, I mean, it's basically, to give you an example, they have to go to political rallies of the government, dress and rally for the government, even if their opinion might not be that. So it's a very tough tough work environment, but there are still good people there. Not that many, but there are some very competent people. And when they reconstruct the oil industry in Venezuela, there will be, I think, a lot of things that these people can contribute to.
Before Chavez, the move of the oil policy in the country was starting to allow a small percentage of privatization. I think it was 10 or 20%.
No privatization, but there was a partnership with foreign companies. I mean, there was a very significant participation of foreign companies. In fact, about a third of the current production of Venezuela comes from the investment that were done by private companies. Many of them were expropriated afterwards by Chavez. Yeah. So, but still, you know, many people do not realize, because of with all the rhetoric that the Venezuelan government has, you would imagine that there are no foreign companies in Venezuela operating. But the fact is that actually about 900,000 barrels of oil of Venezuela, which is about a third, are operated in some way or another with the help of foreign companies, including including companies like Chevron, you know, that couldn't be more American and more, and based by the way nearby in California, and companies, and then many companies from countries that are allied with Venezuela, like Chinese companies and some Russian companies. But a significant portion is the major players in the oil industry, like Chevron, Shell, Eni from Italy.
Texaco was there before Chavez.
Chevron and Texaco are now one company.
Okay.
So Exxon was there. Chavez, only two companies left the country and are in arbitration against the Venezuelan government, which are Exxon and Conoco. These are the two companies that are in a legal dispute with the Venezuelan.
There was also this big branding of the gas station PDV, PDV, that were starting before Chavez, and all of that was on hold because the idea was to expand and actually be like the Texaco and going outside to other countries.
All that project disappeared. I mean, they are losing money. Chavez expanded, bought some gas stations in the southern cone in Argentina and Uruguay, but all that has, I mean, they were losing money everywhere.
They had the
PDV brand in a few places. I think they never use Citgo, because at some point in time they thought about using Citgo, which is the brand that they have in the U.S. But,
Is it Citgo still Venezuelan and producing money?
100% Venezuelan, not producing that much money, but not losing that much money either. It used to be a good business a few years ago because the margins of refineries in the U.S. were very big, but now it's not a good business. Okay. I mean, it's not a well-managed company. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, the business of refining oil and selling oil is not a great business. The business that is good is the business of extracting oil. Mm-hmm. But the business of refining oil is not a particularly good business these days.
Pedro Palma was telling us last week in La Ventana Americana about the way how the oil is managed, the sale of oil is managed in Venezuela, and that most of the production is actually used to buy political support in other countries instead of selling it. What is the actual percentage that gets sold and makes money for Venezuela?
I mean, Venezuela produces about 2.7 million barrels of oil per day. About 750,000 are sold in the domestic market of Venezuela at a loss. They are not sold. They are given for free. Mm-hmm. So you have to subtract that, and you have about 2 million barrels. Of those 2 million barrels, there are about 100,000 that go to Cuba for free, about 70,000 more that go to the Caribbean for free, and then about 400,000 that go to China. And of those that go to China, a part of them are used to repay a debt that Venezuela has with China. So in the end, PDVSA only gets, from the 2.7 million barrels that they produce, they get money, they get the full payment for only about 1.7 million barrels. So
how much they used to sell before Chavez? How many barrels?
They used to produce 3.4 million barrels, and the domestic market, they lost money, but not that much. Mm-hmm. And it was much more, it was 500,000 barrels. So Venezuela used to export about 2.8 million barrels, and they sold it at full price. Of course, that was when the price of oil was much lower. So, so they in the end today they are earning more money than
they're
at the time.
They're making more money selling less oil.
Much less oil, but the price is, I mean, the price is more than 10 times what it was the day that Chavez got into power. Chavez got into power when the price of oil was at $7. The Venezuelan basket was at $7.
Now it's $100.
And now it's at 95 or 95. I mean, the average of last year was 99.
Okay, and it has gotten Venezuelan oil, which is a specific type. It was over 100 not long ago.
Oh yes, the average price of 2012 and 2011 was above 100, and the average price of last year was 99. But because at the end it went down, but on most of the year it was above 100, and so it has been in the last 3 years has been in a range between 92 and 110, something like that. That has been the range. It has been, and this is the highest price in the history of the oil industry in the world, but in particular of the Venezuelan oil industry. And with all these spectacular conditions, they are in such bad shape. It's almost a miracle in reverse. You know, it's hard to make it possible. You have to work hard to destroy an oil company in such an environment.
Well, one of the things that OPEC does is that they put cap on the production that each country can give.
The quotas, yes.
Which one is the
quota of Venezuela is much higher than the actual production, so it's a non-binding constraint.
Commitment. But before we used to go all the way to there, that was 3 million a day, were all the way to the top of what we could sell.
Correct.
Okay. And right now it's still around 3 million, or?
I think it's about 2.9, something like that. But it's not relevant because
we don't get close to that. And it's still one of the biggest reserve of oil in the world. Venezuela.
Officially, we have the largest. If you are more careful about the measurement, you probably will have the second largest. But still, to put it very simply, Venezuela has more oil than it will ever get out of the ground. I mean, we have oil for 300 years, and we will not even
need it. Yeah,
we will not get even half of it.
Yeah, some people say that if they keep taking it from around the Maracaibo area, it will start sinking.
Yeah, well, some of it, that by the way, you know, is happening a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes, that but that's normal. That you have to be careful
when you do it.
When you deplete all the oil, sometimes you have sinking.
Yeah.
May I ask a question? What I would like to know is the unrest, the political unrest right now in Venezuela and the situation that we're living, wouldn't that increase the oil prices and make the political situation even longer and harder to get?
I mean, Venezuela affects the oil prices, but not that much unless something like the oil strike happens again. I mean, a huge decline in production. Venezuela is already affecting slightly the oil prices because the market believed a few years ago that Venezuela was going to increase its production because Venezuela has had these plans to dramatically increase. And so they have come to the realization slowly that it's not going to happen. So the markets have adjusted for the idea that this supply is not going to come. So that, in a way, affects a little bit the price. But remember that Venezuela produces about 2.7 of more than 90 million barrels of oil. So it's less than 3%. So it's relevant, but it's not. I mean, we have now supply in Iran going. Now it's, by the way, slightly going up, but it was down for the last 2 years. We have Libya out of production for the last 2 years. So in those circumstances, if you add Venezuela, that can sort of create some pressure up.
So if the prices of oil stabilize or even go a little bit lower, could really create a more social unrest, a more political issue that we have to be dealing with.
I mean, the price of oil goes, like many predict, to an average of $10 less than it is today, around 80-something in the Venezuelan basket. I mean, the government will be in very deep trouble, very deep trouble.
Venezuela has always been very proud to be founder of OPEC. And we always talk great. Well, we used to talk greatly about it. But when you see the other side, like the guys who are affected, the U.S. has always criticized OPEC
You know, sometimes it's a bit hypocritical when the U.S. criticizes OPEC in the sense that, in the end, this is OPEC, in some points in time, OPEC has created trouble for consuming countries because they have restricted output in situations in which it is problematic. But in many other times, Saudi Arabia has played the role of the sort of the swing producer, meaning that when there is a shortage of oil, they increase production rapidly and they solve the situation. And that I mean that is a great service for the U.S. government. So there is sometimes some hypocrisy. I mean, OPEC is a crazy institution. Imagine an institution in which countries that are the worst enemies in the world, like Saudi Arabia and Iran, that will, you know, go into war almost, you know, and these two countries sit in the same table and decide these things. So it's very it's a very peculiar institution in which enemies, fierce enemies, sit together to make business.
For the same goal, which is great. It's beautiful, like the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
So you think it's still good for Venezuela, OPEC, and it will...
I think it probably makes sense to Venezuela. I mean, the reason being the following. Venezuela, of course, it would be great for Venezuela that OPEC existed and Venezuela did not belong to it, because then we could produce much more. But Venezuela is a producer of higher cost than all the countries in OPEC that are in the Gulf region. So in a way, if we don't cooperate with them, they could hurt us very significantly. So it's hard for Venezuela to leave OPEC and not be punished by the Gulf, by the Saudis and the other Gulf country producers. So it's hard. There are countries like Mexico that have always benefited from OPEC and never belonged to it, and Norway also, and Russia, by the way. So it's a tricky question. I mean, OPEC is a dysfunctional institution, but probably it will be invented. If they hadn't not invented, it will be invented again.
There is a lot of talk in the United States about this fracking thing and the type of oil that they will be taking.
Shale, yeah.
And how will it change the market if it actually goes and, well, that it will?
Already they produce huge quantities of that. And it's a revolution, what has happened in the U.S. I mean, there are some challenges, environmental challenges and effects that fracking might have over the communities where it's produced. But in general, those things are managed if they are properly done. So if the industry is well regulated, I think there will not be big problems. But there are important concerns on how fracking has affected some communities.
Thank you very much for being with us in La Ventana Americana. Muchas gracias.
Okay. I remember that you have been listening to La Ventana Americana. We broadcast regularly from the heart of Stanford University at our studios at KZSU 90.1 FM. And today we were talking with Dr. Francisco Monaldi about oil and the economical crisis in Venezuela. If you want to know more about this and all our other shows in Spanish or in English, you may go to ventanaamericana.com or join our social networks.
This is La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
Esto es La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana de Radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
From KCSU Stanford 90.1.
Desde KCSU Stanford.
KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM.
This is La Ventana Americana from KCSU Stanford 90.1.
KZSU 90.1 FM.
And the program is La Ventana Americana.
A window to the Latin universe from Stanford to the world.
I am Isabel Juves.
And I'm Elizabeth Trachtenberg.
Welcome, bienvenido.